For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
His dad's a serious coach. And boy, I'm telling you, when I brought up, I hope he understands he's going to have to work harder than he ever has in his life. He just, boy, he had that look on his face. He will work harder than he's ever worked in his life. He had that kind of comeback to it. It's great to see that. But more importantly, it is great to be able to tell those wonderful parents, especially those single moms. It is wonderful to tell them how great they are to have had a child that's sitting here getting to go through this process and getting to have this kind of scrutiny and still sitting here available and in play. Thank you, Mama, and congratulations to you. You've done a magnificent job. That's the principal reason right there. And I know that the players, it means a lot to them too. It's a big deal for me.
Calvin Watkins, Dallas Morning News. This is for Will. Usually you get a first-year coach, there's a little bit of a transition of understanding what he wants, but Shadi's been here a couple of years. So has that transition been a little quicker, smoother for you this go-around?
Yeah, it's been quicker because Shadi knows what he wants and explains it very clearly. He understands our process. He's testing the conviction and bringing his points out in it. So it's been a seamless sort of process. And, you know, when you talk about our process, I was talking with the scouts the other day. We're the wholesalers. We know where the fruit are. We're the wholesalers. We're saying what they can do. We're giving it to the coaches. The coaches make up the recipe, and then they own the restaurant. So it's how we all work together. We're trying to get this thing the right way, and there's the consistent way that we do it. And then Shadi saying the little ingredients that they want that are a little bit different than this staff or that staff, it's the communication and then us drilling down to try and find those things that make the little bit of difference.
Quick one for Shadi. As an assistant coach for a long time, how did you like observe the head coaches and say, okay, when I get my shot, I won't do this or I might do that in terms of the draft process?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just to be open and honest, to create a format, which we certainly have done, where there was open dialogue and there was great communication. And at the end of the day, you want conviction. That's what you want. You want when you decide, hey, this is the player we're going to select. You want to be convicted by what's the vision for the player. That's part of our responsibility as a staff to answer some of those questions. But at the end of the day, you know, the systems on both sides of the ball and special teams will be flexible enough to adjust. And at the end of the day, when we line up to play our first game, there's going to be 11 players out there, and whoever the best players are going to be the ones that play.
Nick Harris for Star Telegram. This is for anyone on the board. I know you guys want to be in a position where you can take best player available at 12. How much do you factor in need on this team when it comes to these premium picks, or are you trying your best to stick to the board in this first round?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you are trying to pick the best player on the board. Now, if it's up there and you got guys who are, you know, equally graded for the most part, then obviously you might lean into a position where, hey, we could use a little more help there, and we're pretty strong over here, so let's lean in over here and take that player. But what you don't want to see yourself doing is, you know, picking a player who's quite a bit down the line, you know, a round down, and trying to take that player over a guy that you've got situated, you know, in particular, let's use the 12th pick. If, you know, we got first round grades on players on our board, you want to take that player. And, you know, at the end of the day, those things work themselves out. I mean, we never went into that draft, Micah's draft, thinking we were going to pick Micah and a pass rusher slash linebacker. The year we picked CD, we were thinking we were going pass rusher all the way, and we end up with a receiver. And, you know, great things happen when you do things like that. And, you know, we were just having that conversation the other day about, you know, you just got to, you know, you got to stay true to where these grades are and what these players are, and good things will happen because in this league, players, you know, they rotate through, and if you got young guys coming, it allows you to maybe put resources rather than keeping a guy that you can put with somebody else that enables your team to be better, and that's ultimately our goal.
And okay. For Brian, there's a lot of players in this draft class that have athletic traits, physical traits, but then there's questions about production with some. How do you value traits versus actual production from the college level?
Well, it's the traits that actually give you the chance to project, whether it's speed, size, change of direction, things like that. You try not to get too caught up in just the numbers. The numbers are what they are in terms of 40 time and things like that. The game film to this day is still the best thing, in my opinion, when you're studying a player. And then the one thing you didn't mention was the person. You know, we're looking for those world-class competitors, the guys that are coming in and want to work hard, they're passionate about what they do. Like, so it really is a puzzle that you're trying to fit together. And to me, traits are one of the pieces of the puzzle that you're trying to figure out.
Patrick.
Hey guys, Patrick Walker, DallasCowboys.com. Question more so for Steven, Will, and especially Shadi. Jerry, feel free to chime in, obviously. When you're looking at BPA versus D, if you're looking at a situation where, let's say hypothetically, there are two or three wide receivers who can instantly make an impact, but they have different archetypes for the most part, at what point do you start having the discussion about current personnel as far as being able to slide that scale more towards need versus BPA? How did that discussion come along in the world?
You know, I think I hit on it a little. I just think it matters on the variations. You know, how what is the difference? And, you know, if we got to use our terms, if we got a player with a 114 and a player with a 115, now that's really close. And, you know, in terms of, you know, picking a player who maybe fits your, you know, maybe scratches an itch, if you will, in terms of picking a player that's going to fit a need, even though you might have a tenth of a point, you know, in the big scheme of things, that's not a big deal. But if you're picking a guy who's got a 1-2-4 over a 1-1-4, then to me that's when mistakes are made. And you ended up getting a player that you felt like was a second-round player versus getting a player you could have taken that's a first-round player. That'd okay. be my take.
I'm old enough to remember the last time we had an exciting quarterback fall to the Cowboys when they came up. Have you guys gone through that scenario if there was an exciting quarterback, like, say, Jackson Dart or Shador Sanders there at 12?
Yeah, well, we've got a major commitment with Dak, and so you weigh all of that. And but I was going to add to this whole conversation, it's very often that somebody will step up and say, now, we got this guy right here. We've got him. And we just signed him under contract. But guess what? Guys get hurt. So you bet your whole house that you got him, and then all of a sudden you don't have him. So that's when your old mind starts saying, well, if this guy did get hurt, what would we do this year? There you go. But don't misinterpret. All I'm saying is that you have to figure that rather than say we've got him, we don't have that need, you have to figure that there's some injury to be. Now, how important is that player as opposed to the one you're looking at on the board? And could he fill that need right there? I do that. I really do. And so if we've got depth and that guy gets hurt, that's one thing. If you're left out in the cold for right now and you need that, that's another thing.
Sod.
Sod, used to be athletic. Steven, you guys obviously have a need at cornerback with Trayvon recovering. We just saw Stephon Gilmore walk out the building. Just, you know, What can you say about his visit here?
Well, we always are looking to make our roster better, is what I'd say about any player. Obviously, we did some work in free agency via trade with Elam, and certainly we're fired up about Carson coming back off an injury that really limited him after he had that after the first three or four games. So we do feel like we've got some good corners, but we're always looking to make things better. Now, we have players who we'd like to think love to come back and say hi, and it doesn't always mean because they're in the building that there's a deal in the works. But I think in general, our player acquisition, I always say it's year-round, and we're always looking to get better. And if we see that opportunity, then we'll do it. Obviously, there's a big focus on the draft right now, but it doesn't rule out that we're not looking at trades or still looking at signing other players.
A lot of the players coming out right now, when COVID hit, they were right in the middle of high school. I'm curious, what are you seeing in your conversations or evaluations, how maybe them going through that time has kind of shaped them differently than a lot of other players in the past?
I think the environment of college football has changed in general. You throw the COVID year in there, and then, there are some players that are in this draft that are 24 years old, 25 years old. And it kind of changes the environment that we basically the premise that we start and do in this business is you're looking for guys, blah, blah, blah. It changes the conditions. NIL, there's guys that go to three different schools, all of that. It changes the environment. We have to adjust with that to try and get the right information, make sure we know who they are, take all those things into consideration. It changes the puzzle a little bit.
Kyle.
Kyle Yeomans, Dallas Cowboys TV. First one for Coach and then a follow-up for Will. But sticking with corners and cornerbacks, in the past there's been plenty of significant influence from coaching staffs and defensive staffs when looking at cornerback prospects. How do you guys view some of the measurables when you evaluate some of these corners?
Yeah, I think it's, there's certainly measurables. You want length, you want size, you want the ability to play press man-to-man. The big thing for us defensively is, Flew says it this way, there's no house guests. So everybody's got to be willing to tackle and support the run with the things that we do. But, again, they come in all shapes and sizes, man. And, again, a guy that's maybe a little bit, shorter, a guy a little bit maybe faster. Again, if they have the right play style, if they have the right temperament, and we see some of those things in that regard to play style, the physicality, the ability to, we're always looking for ball skills. We call it ball production. If you find ways to create turnovers, that's really a good thing for your team. And, again, I think, Will and his staff did an incredible job with that. So it was very seamless for us from a coaching staff to be able to speak to Jerry and Steven and Will and his staff because they did such a great job of kind of setting the table. I'll say it this way. I mean, honestly, the scouts are the experts. Like, these are the guys at 365, 24/7. They are on the road. They are working. They know these guys better than anybody else. And then what's been great for us is the communication process of what we want from the system or the players to fit into the system. That's where it's been such a cool conversations.
And, Will, four defensive coordinators since the start of 2020, how much of a challenge has that placed on you and your staff to get that right and have those conversations back and forth to make sure that the owners of the restaurant that you talked about earlier are on the same page?
I think ultimately we have to know the value and be consistent with the value of players, right? We've got to value them the same way year after year, not depending upon the strength or the weakness of the draft so that you have a standard that you abide by. So when we say a first-round corner, we all know what a first-round corner is. There are certain measurables and things that you look at because that's what plays in the league, and that's what's had the most success. We look at all that information, and then as Shadi says, we got to dig into the people. The biggest mistakes are made when it's the people that you get. It's what are you putting them into and who's communicating with them. So a big part of what we're doing is understanding the coaches, what we're trying to do, and then get to know the players and try and figure out the fit as well as the ability. So with the input of the coaches and our whole staff and the scouts doing that, we're trying to get to know the players as well.
Joe.
Joe Trahan, WFAA TV. Jerry, this was for you. Steve was talking before about that CD draft when you picked him, the Micah draft when you picked him. Can you describe what the room is like once the draft goes live and you're waiting to see how you have to read and react as players come off the board?
Yeah. I think, to me, as they come off, I'm just focusing on what happens when he gets there. Okay? If as they're coming off, I don't like there, then I'm saying, boys, is that phone ringing? And by the way, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. Picking up the phone and calling will not do the job. The phone has to be ringing. Well, if I'm not hearing that phone ringing and it's not ringing, then you start really looking at your alternatives. We traded that. Mike is perfect. Mike is perfect. We get there. Boy, they won a top one, but we had right below. You've heard this story a million times. We traded down and didn't take Micah then because we got something there and we still had two. Well, then the rest of them went, and there you got Micah. That's the classic exercise right there. You got looking at it, playing it. Didn't exactly work right for us, but we ended up getting a top player after all. And so...
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The big thing, I think Will hit it the very best of all, the mistakes, which is the hardest thing to evaluate, is the person, is the player person, and their desire, what's inside them. And, I mean, you just can't substitute for somebody that has got talent plus that. And so there's a whole lot of time spent around here looking for what's inside these guys and should be. And that's something we look at real good. This bunch was hot, hot, hot about what was inside Martin when he was dropped, what was inside him. We were hot about what was inside of Tyron Smith, what was inside him, what he'd gotten back from him. And that's when we've really done the best.
And then, Stephen, for you, you talked a couple times about not reaching, and you have players that are similar. But my question is this, because you said this a lot through the years, have you done enough in free agency to make sure that you can be clean in this year's draft and not have to reach for a need, even in the later rounds?
Yeah, I think, that's what I was mentioning at corner with Elam. I think we did overall a much better job than, say, last year of really, doing quite a bit of volume in terms of really improving our roster and giving us, the opportunity and having an environment where we can pick the best player. And I think our work we did in free agency is going to really pay off. I think it's going to make us a deeper football team one way or the other. And what we add through this draft should just make us better and increase the depth that we have. And, most of the time, 99% of the time, that's our goal in free agency, not necessarily to go out and sign, the highest paid guys. Obviously, we signed one. He was our own, Osa, to a big deal. But, that's the way we look at free agency. And historically, we've had, a lot of success in getting those guys, which I think in turn has led, as Jerry mentioned, it's just if you look at the number of starters you've gotten, the number of Pro Bowlers, the number of All-Pro guys, we've drafted at a high level compared to the rest of the league.
John.
Over the last, 8-10 years, we've seen a number of contract holdouts linger through training camp and then sort of disrupt the start of the season in terms of chemistry. What gives you confidence that that won't be the case for Micah Parsons this year for Jerry and Steven?
Nothing.
And to
Nothing. That's not the right answer. That's the answer you're looking for. But the facts are the contracts are clear what happens. And so, but you do have holdouts. And it's plus, that was bargained. That goes on between the players and the teams. And I know you don't need that kind of history lesson. But my point is, you have some, we had it with Martin. And Martin held out. And one way to look at it was we got him. And we had a hell of a year with Martin on that one year.
Sure.
But we also spent $8 million that we'd love to have the next year to go get another player extra.
No, I think that inherently happens when you're, you know, when you're negotiating with great players. I mean, you can find examples all over the league. San Francisco with Bosa, I don't think he came in until 2 days before the first game. And I think they had a hell of a playoff run. So, you know, everybody wants to look for reasons, and you know, we're always critiquing ourselves as to why we didn't have a good season. And I know one of the things that come up other than injuries is the fact that you know, it, although Dak never missed a practice, he never missed anything that he was required to be at. The flip side of that is CD did, and so that becomes a you know, an issue. And but I don't think it is. I just think it inherently comes with the territory. I mean, you look around the league, and most of these players who are getting these very top contracts, it does take time to ultimately get there. And believe me, if we could sign Micah to a number we wanted to sign him to, we'd do it right now. But right now there's a difference in what we feel like is the right number and what he feels like is the right number.
And a quick follow-up to that, I mean, there's a perception that it's just the team is dragging its feet on these contract extensions, whereas agents have to play a role in this too. And have you encountered this over the years where maybe agents are slow in wanting to make a deal because they want to see the market keep getting reset so they can get their player the maximum amount? Because there are two sides to this negotiation, so I'm just curious what we're not really seeing behind those, you know, those talks.
I think you're right on it. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happens. And a lot of times representatives of these players do want to wait. And they think the longer they wait, the market goes up. And, you know, I will say this. A lot of times we want to not do a player a year earlier because we want to make sure because you only get to choose a handful of guys that are going to make these big, big numbers. I mean, there's, you know, maybe as much as a half a dozen guys max that can really, you know, make an inordinate amount of money. And you want to make sure, if you're limited to five or six of these guys, that you pick the right five or six in terms of, you know, who you choose. And at the same time, the representatives want to wait and make sure he gets the optimal amount of money that he can get for the player. So, you know, it's just not perfect, but it's part of it. And there's a lot of teams that have players that wait till the bitter end to sign that go on and have a great year. And then there's other teams that sign a player late and maybe don't have the type of year they had hoped to have.
The reason that I don't like to, on certain situations, certain contracts, that I don't like to deal with the agent. By the way, I don't necessarily deal directly with attorneys when I've done things over my life. I've dealt with the principal, not with the attorney. It's not demeaning. You know they have excellent advice. But many, many times I've gone straight there. We had a great player here, Dez Bryant. We had a major negotiation set up with his agent, Jay-Z. We met Jay-Z in New York. We started at 11 at night. We finished about 5 in the morning. Jay-Z had his advisors. Talking about Dez, we sat there, had one of the greatest, I'll tell you right now, Jay-Z's one of the most first-class people I've ever been around. And I mean, he's got his act together. He was putting together excellent people to be represented by Jay-Z. And those, he wanted to have the greatest work habits. He wanted to have the greatest punctuality. And it wasn't just football or basketball. It was actors, and it was people of all walks of life. And what he said was, is when you have a meeting, I've never been late for a meeting in my life, Jay-Z. And said, I've met on street corners. And he said, I'm always on time, if not early, with it. If they don't make meetings, they won't be in my organization. I can tell you that right now. Okay? If I'm representing him, he'll be at all the meetings. Because you see, the agent is normally maybe a thousand miles away when they're not there or when you're not getting some of the things that you work with on a daily basis with the team. They aren't around. They're there in spirit, but they're not there right on it. I said, Jay-Z, you mean to tell me that Dez will not miss any more meetings? Yeah, Dez won't. He said he will not miss any more meetings. I said, can I call you every time he misses meetings? Can I call you? He said, yes, sir. I'm telling you what it is. I said, hand me the pen. I'm in. We're gone. Let's go. I called you for Dez. Well, Dez missed some meetings. And, you know, I think a lot of Dez wouldn't have done. And he's really a great player, and I like him as a person. But I'm going to tell you one thing. Jay-Z wasn't any place to be found when we were having problems with our football team. I like to go to those key players and be with them and have it right there with them and make sure we were on the same page. Does that sound logical? Okay, that's the way it happens.
All right, you got to follow that up, Joe.
Yeah, sounds good. Joe Hoyt, DLLS Sports. Jerry, you guys have used two of your last three first-round picks on offensive linemen, signed a lot of veteran offensive linemen, but you also had 30 visits with a couple offensive linemen. Long question short, would your previous investments in the offensive line keep you from using high investment in an offensive lineman in this draft?
One of the things that when we started this draft process with we had a coach and we had their offensive, and boy, are we in great shape. One thing Shotty did, he did it right when I said, boy, we want some attention to that offensive line, and he gets his coordinator, that's one heck of a expert there, and he gets one of the best offensive guys. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. Team within the team, the offensive line. And so one of the things that we started the meetings off with was, guys, we've had some of the best offensive lines around Dak known to man. And we've also had some pretty good running backs around him too, around the same deal. Can you put that kind of resources in your offensive line? And can we get up there playing around the rim so that we can get one of these things with that offensive line? And I said, we've been with Larry Allen. We got one when he was rookie. Other than that, we didn't get one. Okay, Zach, we didn't get one. Okay, so it doesn't automatically work. Okay, but generally when you step back and look at it, we've had some pretty good teams around a War Daddy drafted offensive line with a lot of ones. Obviously, when those guys get ready to come up, if they're that kind of player, then you're going to have a lot of resources invested in that offensive line out there with it. Did it pay off? Well, it's done a pretty good job for Dak. Did a good job for the running backs that were around him pretty good there. So you've got something to look at. We won't necessarily eliminate, because we've got the resources we have in the offensive line this weekend, we won't eliminate that because of that experience. We've had some success with loading it up with top picks in the offensive line.
Quick follow-up, too. Will, a couple teams have kind of abandoned using 30 visits. I know you and Jerry kind of touched on this a little bit, but what is the overall thing you're looking for from 30 visits and the strategy behind having 30 visits?
It's getting to know the players, right? It's getting them in front of us. It's some guys have to see the doctor. They don't have medical stuff. So there's a process that we go through with those guys. But it's getting to know them. That's one opportunity. We have formals and informals at the combine. We can Zoom them. We have a number of different ways, and we use all of those to our disposal to learn about the players. 30 visits is just another opportunity to get them in front of us and do some of our things, side things that we do with them.
Pat Doney, NBC DFW. Brian was going to ask, with your potential interest in emphasizing the running game in this offense, how much do you think the runner matters in the running back position has gone up and down in value and how it's perceived. For you personally, how much do you think the running back matters in your offensive scheme?
I think the runners, they matter. It's one of the aspects. You know, you can do it a lot of different ways. I've done it a lot of different ways in my career, whether it's by committee, whether it's a guy that's seen as the bell cow. I think this is an incredibly deep draft at running back. You can find guys that, again, when you're watching them on film, you see the traits and the things that you like. You can have a vision for them, what they would look like fitting into our scheme that, you know, Clayton and the staff are going to put together. But, again, I think, you know, it's a position like others where it's not just the player, it's the talent, all those things, but it's also the person, the wiring. Like, you're hearing us say that across the board here, the person matters. The football character, the love of the game, those things matter, and I think there's a number of those guys at that position in this draft that we're excited about.
And then building upon that for Jerry, we've seen you take Ezekiel Elliott really high in the draft, and we've seen this team not emphasize the running back. Seeing somebody like Saquon Barkley and what he did for Philadelphia last year, has your thought about the running back position changed from what it might have been from the future?
Well, Saquon and Philadelphia got your attention. There's no question about it. You'd be dead if you're doing what we do and not see that happen. I don't think that running back was as significant last year in us not getting where we wanted to go as you do. And maybe others. I don't. I think it was our offensive line that was the bigger impact of the running back situation. Now, you say, well, but still, you didn't have that. You had an opportunity to get those kinds of running backs. I would say that that got my attention. I would say. Now, we hit on a Murray in the fourth round here a few years back, and he was a doggone good running back. Ooh, look at that offensive line he had in front of him. Think about it. Look at that offensive line that Zeke had in front of him. And so I get it completely, the lack of having our offense. It hurt us a little bit to lose Dak early, and y'all know that's condescending as far as the running game was concerned. That didn't help the running game. So this is not excuse time here, but it is appropriate that you'd ask that question, because can you cure the running game with the back? You can help it, in my mind.
Garrett Podell, CBS Sports. First, Stephen, Jerry, and Will. You mentioned having a big commitment to Dak, talking about having a big commitment to Micah. How much do those contracts impact your willingness or aggressiveness in looking to trade down and acquire more picks?
Well, I think, you know, obviously it's a big commitment of resources. But and part of why it's so important to draft is to complement the high-end part of your roster from a what it takes from a resource standpoint with cap dollars. So it is important to get these draft picks. Now, as it turns out, we've got a good number of draft picks because we've lost players through free agency. We've pushed some of those picks down with trades. Like a Joe Milton, who we felt like, you know, when we looked at the quarterback depth in the draft and what we could get versus what Joe might bring to the table, we thought that was, you know, a good trade to make. So we pushed some of those picks back, but we still have, 10 picks. So we think we've got a good number of picks. I don't think we would let that dictate to us whether we move back or not. It's going to be who's there and then what we get, not necessarily just to take a trade back to pick up a pick. It's got to be a value trade for us to make that decision.
Two experiences that we've had. Emmett held out, running back. And Emmett held out. We just won a Super Bowl. And with Emmett out, and Emmett wanted more money. And I get it. And We made him, and we wanted to make him the highest paid running back in the history of the NFL, but he wanted a quarterback, and understood him wanting that, but we couldn't do it. That was back literally before the cap, so that was just my old back pocket, and you just couldn't do that much and make this thing work. Why? Because I had to count on my back pocket, and I knew what was in there. Okay, so we couldn't do it. So this is pro football, and financial has always been here. It's always been here. Now, it's logically here now. So that the reason why that you delay is because you're wanting those resources to not go to there. You want it to go over to where you can have a team, better team around them. You empty that bottle to get that bottle, and you have less around them. Otherwise, you would just say whatever you want. And I'm not demeaning anybody here. I understand. I broke the rules on wanting to go make a buck. Seriously. So I get it. I do get it, and we all get it around here. Now, so this stuff of, well, we're waiting, it's going to cost you more, it's going to do that more. Have you ever thought that you might read more of the tea leaves if you wait a year or two? What if you had a key injury? What if you have key lack of performance? What if all of, well, that's blasphemy. Don't talk about them not being the player you think they are. Well, that isn't blasphemy. That's something else to look at. Frankly, in my life, I have done better because of the tolerance for ambiguity that I have running the quarterback all the way out and deciding whether to pitch or to turn it up himself rather than take the first option and hand it off. And I've done better out of 10. Now, have I had a bloodletting out there a few times? Yes, I have. But I've run it out at the end. And that's the reason why you do it, because you're trying to reduce the amount of outgoes so that you have some left to do it again. I know everybody understands it, but it's just real important. If you think for 1 second that we're letting a player not come in just because are we not sensitive about, well, you might be able to get him for less if you'll put that 5-year contract on him earlier. But you also could eat some players that you might wish you didn't put the money on, too.
Jeff.
Jeff Gold with Fox Sports. Jared, for you, going back to the prospect of drafting a quarterback in the first round, again, something you haven't done since Troy, you mentioned having the major commitment with Dak, having to weigh that. How does that impact how much time you spend on the first round grade quarterbacks, and also possibility of having to have a conversation with Dak about that pick? How does that impact?
Well, the biggest reason is we're set in stone. Now, we weren't set in stone for what happened to us last year, were we? Because he's the highest paid player in the NFL. What was it, 3 games later? Or four games? 4 games later, we don't have a quarterback there. Highest paid player in the NFL. Will it happen? Can it happen? Of course it can happen. You can happen. And I say that again. We are not in the business around here at this time of looking for our future quarterback. By the same token, the fact that we are sitting up here, we have to always be thinking about the future quarterback. And we have to mainly be thinking about what happens if we don't have Dak. So that might impact you here in some way. It's probably not as likely as it would be if you were 5 years from now or 6 years from now as you go on down the road. We'll see. It's not taking one thing away from or adding to Dak. We're so proud to have him because we've got one of the best, and he gives us a chance to win this thing.
And even though we have one, we evaluate them all the same every year because you have to know what's in the league.
But one of the best things that I think that I've been a part of was drafting Aikman in the first round and Steve Walsh in the supplemental, first round. Used 2 first-round picks. Had both of them sitting here. Okay? And, of course, that created angst, enough for you to really write about, obviously. Troy didn't like that at all. Okay? That's a little unfair, bringing in the coach's college quarterback to play on the same team you've just been drafted on. I get it. And admire him for working through that with Jimmy. So, and that was turned out to be good. I got to New York, sat up there, Jim Finks. We made a trade of a life there we go. It turned out. Well, now, you can't read that on the draft room of something like that turning out. But I'll tell you what, Tex Tram did tell me back when we were talking after I'd bought the team. One of the best moves he ever made was had three top quarterbacks out at Los Angeles and traded a couple of them, and they were some of the names of the greatest quarterbacks ever. He said, you can go with having in the same draft, you can go with having multiple top quarterbacks. That was then, this is now. But I'll tell you, it influenced me. And it was easy to do because Walsh was Johnson's quarterback at Miami, and he was the Shula's, who was his coordinator. Shula was the coach of him at Miami. So it was easy for us to do. It was the move to do at the time, and we got out by having Aikman, and we got multiple on our draft picks. Work.
Kevin Sherrington, Dallas Morning News. Jerry, I'm wondering if it makes it a little easier this year to take the best player available if you know that he'll probably meet a need.
Yes. And that's not a different type thinking, Kevin, at all.
Would you say there is as many options available for you or because of that as there has been probably over the last 4 or 5 years?
Excuse me, what?
Probably as many options available to you this year to do that as there have been for 4 or 5 years.
Well, we've got, can I ask you a question about your question? Are you saying we have a few needs? Okay. I thought you were. And yes. In answer to your questions, yes.
Excuse me, what? KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. If people want to break that down, we definitely can. Number one takeaway I had from that, he told a story about Jay-Z, which is amazing. Quick Jay-Z story for you. The entire story was about how Jay-Z had never been late for a meeting in his life. While they're having the press conference that they started like 15 minutes late.
Does that mean, but he never said he'd never been late to a meeting in his life?
Oh, for sure. Because then I'd be like, well, that is factually inaccurate.
Because when you're important, they wait.
I guess so. Then he said Jay-Z was the most high quality character person he'd ever come
across. There's some other stuff there that was said in there.
We're the KNC Masterpiece. Maybe he is. I don't know. Right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's go back to the victorious Dallas Stars and a team that is actually in the playoffs. Ooh. Next on The Fan.
Still played the puck. Lost it to Johnston. Fired towards the net. On the doorstep. Score!
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're going to talk about the Stars' victory. Got a couple of other gridiron notes since we didn't really do that I wanted to throw out for you. The Patriots are supposedly not locked into the fourth pick, and they would be willing to listen to offers for a trade. Meanwhile, looks like the Cardinals are trying to acquire a second first-round pick. Now, for the Stars, I think we all agree, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, it feels like that's the best hockey you've seen them play since probably the end of last month?
Yes.
Would you say?
Yes, absolutely. Like that. And granted, 7 goals being scored on the night is still feels like a lot.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying it was just the best defense or goalie.
What I wanted to say, though, was it was the best entire performance for the whole man, for the entire person, the entire team, is what it felt like. So it felt like the whole, but it didn't feel like that was that way in period one.
I agree.
Nor did it feel that way in period two.
It was specifically period three and overtime for me. Look, we talked about it. I think that with the exception of maybe 3, maybe 4 minutes in overtime, I thought the Stars really controlled the rest of the overtime. And I was excited about that. But that's why it's such a, it can be such a heartbreaking game. Like this and soccer and sometimes baseball. Because like the goals or runs, you're not going to see a lot of them.
Yeah.
And so there was when Colorado took back over.
Yeah, every game last night was a one goal game.
Yes. Yeah. And when they took back over for that 3 or 4 minutes, I was like, son of a gun. If they score here.
It felt like it was going to be impossible. Yeah.
I'm going to be so mad. You talked about the physicality.
Yep.
In game one, they were out hit 30-18. I'm not going to lie. I would have told you I thought it was like 40-11.
Mm-hmm.
But they got out hit 30-18. Last night, 45-45. And I said this earlier. I will say it again. if the Stars can be even or even close to even on a consistent basis on hitting, they're going to win the cup.
The right way. I didn't love.
Yeah, don't take a bunch of bad penalties.
I didn't love Marchment's penalty to that gave the power play goal to McKinnon. I didn't love that one so much because it looked like a reach that he didn't need to do.
Did you think we got jobbed on the end of the third period?
The Miko hooking. Yeah. I did because it just looked so incidental instead of intentional, and I don't know if that's the way they rule that. Sometimes it is just it's the unlucky way that your stick fell and then you're screwed. Man, how many broken sticks were there last night?
Dude, for real, especially as you got toward the end of the game.
The physical part of it. I go back to even Miko when he was offensively handling the puck in the zone as he'd get near the ice. He's leaning into it. There were times I thought they were going to push him over, and he's like, no, I'm not going down. They all seemed like they had a different edge about them last night, and that was necessary for them to establish that, not just them, though. Like, that can't be a one-off thing.
Or else you'll lose.
This needs to be your playoff identity now. Your playoff identity, you already know that you can fly around the ice, you can score, you're skilled. But you have to continue to be a physical presence because teams are going to feel like they can bully you if you don't.
Now, obviously, big thumbs up to Colin Blackwell. He scored the game-winning goal after being a healthy scratch in game one. I was also excited.
Dude, what a cool story, too.
It really is. I was also excited because one of the X factors that we talked about, not just last night, but for the rest of this series, because, look, maybe I'm wrong. I hope it doesn't go against us, but doesn't this have the feeling of a long series?
Yes. And you should expect that because NHL wants it that way.
For sure.
They realize, I mean, last night on the broadcast, multiple times they mentioned, look, these two teams could be, cup teams.
Yes.
They could be in the Western. So, like, there were lots of moments where you're like, yeah, this is kind of like that.
So I was excited to see Thomas Harley score the then go-ahead goal, although I know we bounced back and forth all night early in the second period because that's one of the people that we had mentioned yesterday as X factor for not only that game, but the series.
Yeah, Harley, and you feel really good when he's got a shot?
Yes.
And from the point, like he just, the way that he gets that one, I'm trying to be very careful with the way I say that. Way that he's able to get the puck away from his stick so quickly, and with so much power there. Dodonov's goal, it seems lucky, but he was in the right place.
Whatever, Colorado to slide had that puck
through his knee, through his legs there.
In game one, they had a couple of lucky goals.
Oh no, absolutely, and that's last night. The Stars' first goal, Sagan's goal, looked like it was rehearsed. Like it looked like a goal that they were used to scoring.
I love this from the 2-on-4. Blackwell's goal was the most hustle play that ever hustled. Now, he took the shot.
That was so slow motion. It was a movie moment of everybody's looking at the puck going, you could see it in everybody's legs. The shifts got shorter. Everybody was exhausted. They all looked at the puck like somebody's going to get to it. And Blackwell said, it's going to be me. Yeah, I loved it.
And especially,
and nobody was touching it. Everybody just sat there and looked. And he could have ordered a pizza, gone to the Jack Daniels Club downstairs, and then said, you know what? I'm going to have a couple drinks. Then he finally got back to it. Back to you.
It was especially because there was two Colorado players right on the other side that essentially were like, not kind of turned off to the side, turned backwards. That you're like, oh my God, they're right there. And he was able to just just zip right back in there and even the way the goal was scored
like off his stick, it didn't look like the hardest shot. It was a soft shot, but it was slow-mo. Everybody's exhausted.
Yes.
Everybody's tired. So that's the goal, Kevin. Wear out the opponent.
That's from then Chariots of Fire, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody caught that or cared.
Do you remember when Mr. Bean played that at the Olympics?
I think so.
It was so cool.
Has this changed your prediction? Like we talked about it. Ryan Ray said before the series started, Stars in 7. I was on board with that as well. And I would stick with that at this one.
I think had I said stars in three, right?
Yeah. Okay, that is incorrect.
So this has changed, obviously. Uh-huh. No, stars in seven was, I did not expect this to be a short series at all.
Right.
These, the evenly matched two teams, the opponents are so evenly matched. The offense that both teams are able to produce, and then the way that they are, the way that these two teams are, and the way that they're matched up this early in the playoffs is it does set up for a game seven, which again the NHL wants. They want to bleed as much as they can out of the first round whenever you have this kind of hockey being played.
So do I, because Pete DeBoer has never lost a game seven. So I look.
He's also never won
the Stanley Cup. That's fair. And you can't switch both of those trends this year.
No, he can't.
He can't lose a game seven and win the Stanley Cup. Can't do it.
Nope.
That's the kind of info I would go into that game and be like, Pete DeBoer's never lost a game seven. And you're like, you realize that actually has no impact on this.
Except for maybe he's just a really good coach in game sevens. In a one game playoff, he's the guy.
Exactly. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
Oh, man, I got a lot of things to choose from, but the most important one, Kevin, how many times do you offer to pay the bill before you give up? Next on The Fan. Ooh.